love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts: the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day! Oh, happy blessed place! Oh, happy blessed time! Oh, happy blessed path! Oh, happy blessed opportunity! In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
This undercurrent of joy.
Undercurrent of joy.
Yes. You know, I can hear things for a long time, but it doesn't really sink in until it's ready to sink in, I guess. And I guess what I've been seeing is, you know, once again, this, I don't know how to describe it, but like parallel tracks running along, you know, has to do with the focus of my attention, you know, when I want to put it on the track headed for doom and gloom, or the other track, you know, headed for joy. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, it's just for the longest time, it's just conditioning, thinking that that track of joy was something that I had to, like, put in place somehow, or had to, like, manufacture, kind of in the line of, along the line of affirmations. You know, God knows I'm really a depressed person, but if I affirm often enough that I'm a joyful person, somehow it's just going to pop over there into joy, you know.
Noticing there's two parallel tracks, and just determined by the focus of your attention whether your attention is on that track of doom and gloom or that track of joy, and how, seeing how conditioning thinks that there's something that you have to do to manufacture that track of joy, that you have to affirm it. If you affirm it enough, then there, it's something, it sounds like you have to do something or work at in order to experience that track of joy.
Yeah, you know, because I don't know, it seems like the popular thinking out there is that, like, you know, depression can be inherited, it's in your genetic makeup, and, you know, it's just, yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I've just been seeing more and more that it's the focus of attention is focusing onto what's real, and looking to see that's real, that this person, there is this joy that's present, mm-hmm. that's probably, it's independent of this person, I guess, called Sequoia, but, you know, it's just this, it's this wellspring of joy that's impossible to turn my attention to.
Mm-hmm. So a wellspring of joy that's possible to turn your attention to. And and that sounds like more and more you're having the experience mm-hmm. of doing that, turning your attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's not anything that this I needs to work at or mm-hmm. needs to do something about, or, you know, it's just there. It's just there waiting to it's just waiting to be drawn from. Mm-hmm. And it's always there. So that's kind of fun. And you know, it's still a mystery to me. There are times when that, you know, when the track goes through a tunnel or something, I cannot see that wellspring of joy no matter what. And conversely, when I'm in the joy, I can't remember the doom and gloom. It seems like, why in the heck would I ever go there? You know, but that, you know, it happens over and over again. I'm in the tunnel either. You know. So. It's just an exploration, but yeah, I've just been looking at that.
Yeah, an exploration of joy, looking at how sometimes you're in the tunnel of doom and gloom and don't see the possibility that joy is ever present. It's always there, just waiting.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you're in the experience of joy and you forget that it's even possible to be in that doom.
Right. Not only possible, but it's probably inevitable that I'll switch tracks again at some point. But yeah, so anyway, it's just been fun to look at.
Good to see. Thank you. Jen?
That's really fun. I've been really enjoying some of the, via an email class that's going on mm-hmm. and just other things. Really looking again, it's the whole thing we always look at, but the illusion of an I, mm-hmm. that there is no I. And what I just really heard in that first conversation is the joy, there's a lot of words you could put there, right? Peace, mm-hmm. well-being, that is. Mm-hmm. And I come in to interrupt that. Mm-hmm. I comes in, I should say, mm-hmm. to interrupt that.
Yeah, that illusion of the separate self comes in and interrupts what already just is, the joy or the peace or well-being.
Yeah, and it really is. I've been having a lot of fun and success at practicing in those mysterious tunnel places. Mm-hmm. And my most recent thing that I'm doing, which Sherry had said to me, I listened to a recording of a group a long time ago, I mean not that long ago, you know, sometime mm-hmm. almost a few months ago or something. And she was pointing at that place of where it's just coming at you, you know, and just completely laughing at it. But, of course, at least in my experience, the laughing, I mean, that's not available. You know? And so I've been doing that just, I don't even know how to, you know, quote, artificially laughing. Mm-hmm. Out loud, loud, uh-huh. really loud. And it's so funny because forever I've known that's a possibility, but before I even get anywhere remotely close to it, it's like, well, that's not going to work. Uh-huh. Don't do that. And yet, I've really been doing it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I realize is so brilliant about it is it takes up the entire system, at least in my experience. Like, it engages the whole system on every level, like muscles, uh-huh. and the mind can't think, it feels like. It takes everything to do that. Mm-hmm. And so automatically, there's a shift.
Automatically, there's a shift. In doing that artificial laughter, which takes up the whole system, mm-hmm. the muscles, the mind, everything to do that. Mm-hmm. And there's a shift that happens. Mm-hmm. And previously, it would occur to you to do that, and the thought would be, well, that won't work. but in actually doing it, it sounds like there's a disidentification that happens.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And of course, I imagine the disidentification must happen just before I actually
just
do it.
Uh-huh.
Has to be, right?
Yeah. In order to actually, yeah, the person who thinks, well, that would work, isn't the one who actually goes ahead and does it.
And that's the key point, actually. I'm glad mm-hmm. you said that, because that is the key point, is to get it. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
That is not me. well, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. That's not me. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole, that's where the mired confusion is. It feels like, yeah, it's not going to work. It's like, wait. What? Who? And so maybe it will and maybe it won't. And what does that even mean? Uh-huh. You know, just all these things that go unquestioned. Mm-hmm. This is, what pronouns to use, but this is the opportunity for this being to potentially have a portal into joy. What's the downside? Is there something risk here? I mean, am I going to get struck dead by trying to laugh? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, it's really getting it that's not you. Yeah. That stance of it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And there's this possibility of a portal to joy, and why not?
Come on, mm-hmm. Let's go. Yeah.
Well, in the line of the conversations so far, I had an experience walking down here today, this very few minutes ago, where I was just suddenly there, you know, and just aware of how beautiful everything was around me, how rich the green was, and how fresh the air smelled, and I went, ah, life. And then I thought to myself, you know, we had an exercise and we've been practicing listening to what life would say. Mm-hmm. So I just asked, I said, life, what would you say? Or what, do you have anything to say? And it said, you know, and I was just feeling really grateful, you know, for being alive right now and everything. And it said, I'm always here. You can come anytime. Mm-hmm. I won't come and get you, but you can come here anytime. And I thought that's just in keeping with the two tracks, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that it's a choice, and it's a not only that doesn't, you know, as the other share was, it's not always, doesn't always feel like a choice, but life is just there available.
Uh-huh. Life is there available. Yeah. You have the experience of that walking down here, you feel the present and asking what life had to say. Life said, I'm always here, and you can come anytime, and I will come get you, but you can come here anytime.
Yeah, and it made me realize that it's that way all the time. You know, mm-hmm. I was just kind of in an expansive moment because of the way things have changed, and it was just so vibrant, and it was just, it woke me really up to it. Mm-hmm. But it made me realize when it said that, that of course, you know, whether it's stormy or nighttime in the middle of the dark or whenever it is, it's just a matter of that focus.
Uh-huh. And it's a matter of the focus of attention.
Yeah.
What is ever present, just what's always available, and you can go there anytime.
Yeah.
Okay. Penny.
A couple of things from that. I think I remember learning in psychology class that if you're smiling, the musculature of your face sends a message to your brain that you are happy. And you can't, the brain can't process that you're sad. It's kind of fun. And conversely, if you're scowling, the message is that you're not happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just recalling that when you're smiling, the muscles send a message to your brain that you're happy. And when you're scowling, it likewise sends a message that you're unhappy.
So I'm behind in email class, and so I was just doing last Tuesday's class about the wolves. Mm-hmm. And I had this great experience this morning. I mean, that every time we're pointed to that, it's like, oh, right. And I just had that experience, you know, I'm walking into the kitchen and turning on a faucet. Mm-hmm. That I could get either hot or cold water out of. Mm-hmm. And then filling my tea kettle and opening a cold refrigerator full of food. Mm-hmm. And just and then going to the pantry to get the tea, and the pantry's full of food. And just, you know, I was like, what's the problem? just that experience of abundance that I cruise through every morning, and I can cruise through the whole thing and never see it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just seeing this morning all of the abundance around you, that's that on other mornings you can just cruise through and not see it.
Yeah.
Really experiencing the abundance, the hot water or cold water, the cold refrigerator, the food in the pantry.
Mm-hmm. And it is similar to the to focusing on the jewel, you know, mm-hmm. it seems like. And I had this neat experience in sitting the other day where I remembered that. And you know, as we say the daily recollection, we talk about the three jewels, mm-hmm. Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. And I thought, oh, the jewel's mm-hmm. in the setting. There's the jewel is surrounded by jewels, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I sit now, I imagine that, you know, that the jewel of who I am is surrounded by the other jewels. And that's just a very powerful image.
It's
mm-hmm.
a powerful image, yeah. There you are, sitting and experiencing yourself as the jewel, and then being surrounded by the three jewels.
Yeah, and what I'm appreciating as about both of those things is that it just feels like it is so the avenue to take that, you know, that it just steps out of conditioning, mm-hmm. and that, you know, trying to do anything else with conditioning doesn't work because it just feeds that wolf. Uh-huh. You know, even arguing with it, trying to get free of it, trying to figure out a way, mm-hmm. none of it works. Mm-hmm. All that works is to step out of it. And I so appreciate, I mean, I think Sherry does it all the time, but particularly the lessons in this email class mm-hmm. are all pointing to that, just leave it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All of those lessons in the email class are pointing to just leave it. Mm-hmm. That interacting with conditioning in any way, even trying to do something about it or argue with it or any of that, just that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That, the thing that works is just to step out of it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex? Mm-hmm.
That funny, Wei Wu Wei keeps coming up. He's finally showed up in the email class. And there's this particular passage that I love so much in that book, Ask the Awakened. I know the title of the chapter, and it's actually a recording on my that I listen to. It's on my daily favorites. I probably can do it verbatim, but I'm not going to try. But I can give you the gist of it. The gist of it is that it's basically what was just shared, that ego would like to get us into a relationship with it in which we try to get rid of it, appease it, do what it, you know, fix ourselves, mm-hmm. All sorts of things like that. And he says the radical way to deal with it is to get rid of it. don't entertain it, don't listen to it, it doesn't exist. I remember the last passage, we do not possess an ego, we are possessed by the idea of one.
We are possessed by the idea of one.
Yeah, that was the one that was always powerful for me. It was like, wow. and that, you know, it points back to what every Zen teacher that it feels like I've read has always said. It's like, it's not a matter of getting involved with it, it's a matter of staying still and allowing it to go away. And I think that I was sitting here and I was oh, I wish I had a piece of paper and pen to write down all these great ideas people are sharing, you know, I just have so many these little exercises and things like that, you know, like setting a timer to remind myself to focus on the moment of joy or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was Orson Welles. Did he write the 1984? Something about moment of hate just comes up, and I thought, wow, I've got to set a timer for a moment of joy where I just sit there and spontaneously laugh.
So a lot has come up in group this morning.
I know, I got out of the gate, sorry.
So you had the idea to set a timer and have a moment of joy and just spontaneously laugh.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yes. To kind of like just bring it on back, mm-hmm. bring it on back, because it's funny. There's these little passages about, you know, if you don't leave joy, you don't have to come back to it. But it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Sure, that's true, because it's always there. Uh-huh. But there's no reason not to come back.
Mm-hmm. And there's no reason not to come back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, it's really great to be here for one, mm-hmm. and I've really been noticing since I've been here how conditioning is never satisfied. Mm-hmm. And then I'm starting to wonder, who's making these decisions anyway? Because I made a commitment and decision to come to the Zen Monk program, mm-hmm. and on a deeper level. But also, I think conditioning said, okay, you jumped on the bandwagon, so I'm going to go with you. And you know, then I got down to Murphy's a little bit early, or Angel's Camp, and I'm sitting down there and go, well, can I go have a cup, because I'm early, so I have a cup of tea. Uh-huh. And the conditioning's going, well, you know, if you drive up to that gate, you're not going to be able to come back. He was the one that made the decision also. And then coming out here, I got brought to a beautiful hermitage, and it's a lovely hermitage. But then later on, it's cold. They also just said, well, it's cold in here. It's never satisfied. Conditioning likes and dislikes, and it's never satisfied. And so I got to wondering, you know, that's a tricky part, place for me, the liking part. I can understand the dislike, because I'm disliking and discomfort and probably in conditioning. But the liking part, I get triggered. I get fooled by that, because when I'm in joy, I'm loving life, I'm liking life, and on a certain level, but also conditioning likes also. So but then he'll jump back into dislike. So I'm watching that jump back and forth, back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know?
So you've gotten the opportunity to really watch conditioning in action since coming here.
Oh! I don't have much choice. This is so great about being here with Montessori is that I don't want to use the word force to pay attention, but it's a good thing to pay attention, because you don't have much choice. Either you are or you're not. And, for that, I'm grateful to be here. And when I'm in gratitude, everything is okay. You know, it's all good in that area. And conditioning is never satisfied. I can look at my whole life back till now. And we're going to have that, the car's not right, the job's not right, it's not right. It does that to this day, to, and it's doing today. So I get to notice it.
Just that process of dissatisfaction and liking and disliking, yeah. Back and forth between the two.
Yeah.
Thank you. Janice.
Well, I have very deep gratitude for being here, and I'm looking at the excitement I had since December to have the possibility of being a visiting monk, and I just hold that. There was almost a part of me that thought, oh, I maybe don't have to show this to everybody, and but it's just out there. So coming here and just moment by moment seeing, even along the way, doing something like packing, which creates a lot of anxiety for me about what to take, what not to take. I won't get this done, I can't, you know, do everything. I just kept dropping it, and I don't know if the process was fun, but it sure wasn't as anxiety-ridden as usual. And I think it's a lot to do with the email classes and turning towards the light and saying mantras to myself, well, there is nothing wrong. I'm going to this wonderful experience that I've chosen to do. This is for my well-being. And so let's just take these things and not talk about that anymore. and then actually being, practicing with the being, not just on time, but being early. Because there was a lot of habit energy in my life to cram more and more in. So noticing all the choices along the way, being early for the airplane, being early for the transit, being early for getting on the BART, being a whole hour early, waiting extra, just walking meditation, and I had to actually record it, because it was like, I am stunned. This is what it feels like to be early. I can't believe it. What a gift. Like, but it was such an unfamiliar feeling.
Uh-huh. It was such an unfamiliar feeling, and you had the opportunity to record about it, and so now you can listen to that again.
Yeah, and I really wanted to try and like say, okay, this is, I can celebrate this by just continually just imprinting it on, like, this is where I feel, ah, breathe it again. You know, just to really suck that in, because the other imprints were so strong, to be in a rush, be barely on time, just, and all, I noticed all those choices that I would have made along the way to make me that little bit just on time, mm-hmm. and recalled the energy of that chronic anxiety mm-hmm. of, will I be just on time? So, it's wonderful to be here and practice mm-hmm. that. So.
Thank you.
So. Well, one thing I've been looking at it, along these lines is this, that open-hearted generosity is like, I can't say the key because the key is Willie, but it is like a turning, is to me the turning point to joy. Mm-hmm. And it can be generous in anything, you know, just that when I think of open-hearted generosity, I think of like, or it just feels like openness and that innocence, everything, you know, with those things we talk about, and it's kind of like a generosity of spirit or a generous nature. It doesn't have to mean, what just means giving, I guess, being in love or whatever. But that seems like a turning, that's the turning towards joy for me. And it, if I'm not in a place like that, if you know, a generous act or a kind act or anything that manifests this generosity seems to open the heart and, or even a generous thought, you know, which is the same as turning towards that.
Mm-hmm. So looking at open-hearted generosity as being the turning point towards joy.
Yeah, and, you know, in what I've noticed, which I think is one of those acts is noticing I'm identified, or if I just am identified, and there's certain things I'm sure we all do, but the feelings of being identified that I use as the clues to mm-hmm. know I'm identified, and I have found myself just saying I feel one of those clues, you know. And, instead of saying, oh, I'm identified, I'll say, oh, this is really interesting, and I'm really meaning it now. You know, we used to use it as a way to get disidentified. Now in the spirit of inquiry, I'm really meaning it. Wow, this is really interesting. Let me see. You know, and that feels like one of those being generous with myself rather than, you know, being small, because it's like, it's really opens up everything, and obviously, I'm not identified anymore, uh-huh. and it feels different completely all of a sudden. Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to be generous with yourself to, when you see those clues that you're identified, to say, oh wow, isn't this interesting? And to be coming from a spirit of inquiry, it really is interesting. And then you're not identified anymore.
Yeah, and it's in it, when you're saying that, I realize, don't just say that, it's like, because that's what I used to do. Oh, this is interesting. But it's like, when I say that, all of a sudden I see, you know, this piece of condition over here, and this is what's doing this, and this is this part of the process like this. You know, it's just like a little something opens up, and it's kind of, and I think that's what does it. It's really is looking within, mm-hmm. you know, rather than just having the mind say that this is interesting kind of thing. And it's really good. It's fun. It makes me laugh. That's kind of one of the things that makes me laugh. Particularly when I get disidentified, then I always laugh at that because it's just so much fun to see that magical thing happen.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to see that magical disidentification happen.
Yeah, that's all.
Thank you.
I just had one other thing that I saw in the conversation that I've been, keeps coming up for me, around the thing of, oh, I want to write down all these ideas, you know, that people are having. And I keep getting reminded recently that there's a reading, and I think it's Trying to Be Human, the spiritual patchwork quilt. And only that is so good. What it points at, this is my understanding anyway of it, is like, okay, there's this awareness and this, okay, got that one. Okay, oh, this one. Okay, yeah, let's see, that one could go here. Okay. Now let me connect, if I sew this one up to the top and then pull this one down, and there's this sense of like, well, okay, I could really get somewhere. If I could like get all these awarenesses and put them all where they go and really like really remember them and really get and do all the practices, then. And of course it's amazing because that is the process. That is the process of, again, what we've been talking about all morning, the I doing it. And it's been so relaxing. I've been doing a little bit of sort of, in very slow increments, some spring cleaning kinds of stuff. Inspired by other people talking about, you know, cleaning up karma, just doesn't even matter how big it is or how much I'm doing at once. It's just moving in the right direction.
Right.
And I just realized, wow, there's like this spiritual hoarding that can happen. Like there's this little piece of paper with this insight, and there's this special process map, and there's that process map, and there's this. So funny. I can see it. It's almost here. There's a sense like, no, I'm really going to go back to that process map and fill it out. And there's like 15 of them. And I just realized, you know what? I can recycle all of these. Okay. And that leaves room to just be here right now. And every insight is the same thing. Mm-hmm. And just be in that insight. And there's nothing to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And it's so relaxing.
Yeah. It sounds relaxing. to let that go. Just being in that open space,
yeah.
And, instead of that spiritual hoarding of clinging to this insight or that insight and piecing it together.
Gotta remember it and study it.
Thank you. Alex.
I'm sorry, it must be in the air because I've gone through some of that kind of stuff too. I just found all these things that I take good notes from the New Year's retreat. I mean, just, and I sat down one evening, and it was either going to be drastic, like, you know, I started reading them into my recorder just as a way to get rid of them, in a way that, well, maybe I'll listen to it. Maybe I'll listen to that too. So maybe if it comes up on random, it'll be like, wow, that's really neat. I wonder where this came from. anyway, just. It's so funny that, it did actually takes up less space that way. The practical part that came up, it's like, you know, I could just delete this in a flash. You know, so anyway, that's a lot that's been coming up for me too, is this kind of, what can I do with what it is that I've got? I'm kind of teetering back and forth between there's got to be a way to make it all work, watching that kind of process go on, like, how can I maximize the amount of time that I've got with what it is that I want to do and can do, and, you know, can I possibly do something at the same time as the other one? Can I walk the dog and do this other thing that would take care of me? And it's probably funny brushing my teeth while walking. It's got the funny image, but
so just look at ways to maximize the things that you can do.
Exactly. Versus just chucking it all in. I don't know what would happen if I chucked it all. Actually, you know, I've never tried that part. Maybe that's what I'll practice with at this point.
Might be interesting to see.
Yeah, it might be. Uh-huh. Yeah, at least if we get out of that particular draw to do that. The way that it's like, there's got to be a way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it gets framed as like, well, anyway, I won't get into it, but it's seen as something really positive. It's like a positive trait to be able to. It's called efficient, you know, and it's sometimes it feels like not really here.
So try that. It gets labeled efficient, but what you're seeing is that that you're not really there.
Yeah. Sometimes it's got that undercurrent of there's got to be a right way to do it, and there's always this kind of manipulating of externals to try to get it just right. And I've been watching this manipulation of externals, trying to get something right, and what I keep coming to is like, why am I doing this? Because it is right. But maybe a little bit more to the left, just trying to get it, I guess, perfect.
Trying to get it perfect.
Yeah, like, if I do that, then it will be just right. Yeah. So anyway, that's very interesting right now. So maybe I'll swing over here and maybe we'll get we'll class through the middle and find out what the middle way is.
Report back.
I will. Thank you.
Linda.
So I've been having an experience that feels similar to what's just being described, and I've been mostly opting to chuck it all, and just seeing in this conversation how those 12 or however many journals have been stored in Rubbermaid tubs in the dusty loft have actually in some way been an energy suck, just because they're there. And what I saw as I was going through and I was finding really efficient ways to take them apart and fire with them, seeing how it all was maintaining the illusion of a separate self, that it's all background material. I can refer back to what I said in that therapy session, God knows how many years ago, and recreate in a way that person who didn't exist then and still doesn't. And the I give you a chance to read.
Seeing how those that box full of journals was actually an energy suck, and that it was also a way of maintaining the I, the illusion of a separate self, with this background information that you can, the I can go back and read about what that I was doing.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Yeah, and I just saw that. I've also been looking at. I've got. Right where I see them, pictures of myself at 6 months and 3 years, and how in a way that could be the same thing, and yet it's also, for me, it also helps to see, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm looking at the 6-month-old, those are not the same being. Somebody told me that's a picture of me. Yeah, so somehow, to reinforce how this being is not the same. And the journals are, in a sense, the same thing, but there's a way of holding on to that information that can, feels like it can reinforce, yes, that's who I am, and that's what I went through, and like that. So that makes sense.
So looking at a picture of yourself at 6 months old and looking in the mirror and seeing that's...
I look really different.
You were told that's a picture.
Yes. That was much hair, but...
yeah. But seeing that as a different being, having a different experience with that than with those journals with all that information that is...
Somehow the photo doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't reinforce, yes, that's me, but it feels like the journals have that almost intention. They have that, or had. They no longer exist, so.
They had that intention.
Yeah.
Reinforcing that story of who you are.
Yeah, and it is that story, as Cherry points out often, that if you look back, you'll notice that it's the same person who journals every time. So it carries story themes. And it was interesting to me at how incredibly uninterested I was in sitting down and reading all the things that
very nice person, but wrote so many years ago and believed then. Yeah,
just interesting to see how uninteresting it actually was to reread what that person had to say.
And to see the story. Yeah, in ways perhaps I wasn't able to at the time. I don't remember. But it is definitely an unburdening. Yeah, to recycle all of that.
So,
thank you.
Penny.
That is just so, yes. I love the Rubbermaid tubs. I mean, I've had that experience too of just going back to something I wrote that was so passionately written and just thinking, oh my God, couldn't get through the first paragraph. It's so uninteresting. And it makes me, when it came up for me, it was two things. One is, even on the recorder, you know, I have now four recorders, I'm on recorder number four. And sometimes when I go back to recorder number one, it's interesting, and sometimes it's like, oh, yeah. But I really like that what comes up for me is, it's the act of recording that matters. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what's going on for me in the act of recording that is helpful. And often, going back and kind of rehashing that is not helpful because I'm not there right now.
Going back to recording number one, now that you're on recording number four, and the experience is that it's not terribly interesting, and yet what you're seeing is it's the act of recording that's really helpful in that moment that you're doing the recording and the going back and listening and rehashing. It's not necessary.
It's only helpful in the sense of, oh, they're, you know, seeing that I'm carrying the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's helpful, is to catch it. Oh, yeah, I'm still in that story. And it's a story, as we said before. So that's just really interesting. And the other thing that came up for me is that another form of, I think, spiritual hoarding, and I like that term too, I'm reading Ask the Awakened, and one of the things he talks about is when we read something, how we bracket the things we like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And record the things we like, and you say what we should be doing is recording the things we don't like. Because the things we like that reinforce the I that likes them. And you know, the things I read are all bracketed and underlined, and so clearly I've bracketed that statement. But I think it's really helpful, you know, to notice what it is we would like to reject, because there's an I that's making all those choices. So even reading something that's spiritually uplifting, the temptation is to select the parts that are most reinforcing.
Yeah, the temptation is to select the parts that are most interesting and to reinforce that I who has that like. And how interesting would be to actually record and bracket the parts that you don't particularly like.
But to really challenge who that I is.
To challenge who that I is.
Sequoia.
I've loved all this conversation about hoarding and divesting and all of that. You know, it just brought up that, you know, we committed to deepening practice this year, and it just somehow feels like that, like that's the manifestation of that on some level of just like, you know, chucking all this stuff that's just dragging us down and preventing going to a deeper level of practice. And it's interesting. It's certainly, for me, it doesn't even feel like a conscious decision. It's like every time I turn around, there's been another request to, like, get rid of another level of stuff, you know, and I was just looking at that, feeling that, you know, more that presence of joy, and I can't help but wonder if that's not from, like was just mentioned, you know, just opening that space, and for something to come in that, one of the things that's happening is that there's another computer coming my way, and you know, so it's like in every area. So now it's like, you know, just junking all the stuff that I've let build on that computer. That is like, oh my God, you know, and haven't been looked at you know, 6 years, and it's not at all important. And, you know, so even at that level, just, you know, getting rid of it and getting rid of it. And my hermitage, too, you know, just like looking around and, you know, looking at all the stuff that, it's interesting, when I came to the monastery, it's interesting to me, but I gave everything away, just about everything, you know. And I was pretty happy for a while. You know, it's interesting, I haven't missed any of it too much. You know, every once in a while, Kadishin would go, remember that lamp you had for 30 years? It's like, put it in a cardboard box and it went to who knows, you know? And I'm, oh yeah. You know? But it's just so, it's been so not important. And then I watched how I started accumulating things, you know? Maybe not the same kind of things, but it's pretty interesting, you know? A little here, a little there. You know, a little in that corner, and so it just it's feeling really fun to just go through and to just do it in the light of something's coming in that's like, who knows, but it's real exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting just creating that space and seeing that correlation of having that open space available and being present to the joy that's available.
Yeah.
And just really, in the year of deepening practice, just chucking it, just all of the stuff that's accumulated and on the computer and in your hermitage and just on all levels, just really creating space.
Yeah, just let it flow into all the nooks and crannies and see what new thing wants to be created.
Yeah, just new thing wants to be created.
And get ready to check that too.
it's
cool.
Thank you. Janice.
This is such a fun conversation. And I know that when it comes to, say, spiritual practice, I'm very aware when an insight comes, that's brilliant. And then just letting it go, I can do that. Because it seems like things just recycle. They pop up again. Like Sherry was saying more recently in one of the radio shows or something, that there isn't anything terribly new. It keeps coming up when you work with that. And I can see, you know, that on a spiritual level, like, I don't write notes during a Dharma talk, for example, because in that instant of writing something, I'm missing something else that's right there and available. But when it comes to the material side, so talking about recorders, for example, the non-technical eye thinks that something has to be saved on that recorder. And coming here, I had my first recorder, which you couldn't download onto any media, so I had over the years bought another one that I could download, but the non-technical eye doesn't know how to download it anyhow. So it got all shockingly used up, and I almost bought a third recorder. I went to the store and I talked to the person. There was a demo one, and it was the wrong booklet to go with it. It didn't have all these things, and I just said, it was 9 o'clock closing, and I said, you know, I actually don't think this is necessary. I went home and I asked my daughter to erase. Could she do it? Mm. And she said, is there any you want? And I thought, I don't know. It's so random, you know? So I said, save B. I didn't even know what was there. I was very glad that I randomly saved something.
I'm so glad that you you saved it and had the opportunity to listen again. And we're also noticing that you often do not, an insight will come and you will just let it go. That and you don't take notes when, because you don't want to miss something that's offered in the moment to write something down. That you will then miss something by that.
the insight for me was that it doesn't have to be 100% I let it go. And I don't worry 100% keep, like that saving, you know, maybe, 15% of that recording. Like it's not all or nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's not all or nothing.
So I could play with that, and it made it a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay. June.
The house I live in has some odd design features. And the master bedroom and bath, particularly. And in the bedroom, there is a shelf that's almost 2 feet wide and runs the entire length of the bedroom, and it's about shoulder height. Well, it's just an invitation. And someone said years ago that the state of your home or house, I suppose, reflects the state of mind. And I tried really hard for that not to be true. And it just so clearly is. But so then, in the spirit of spring cleaning and in the spirit of we don't think ourselves into a new way of acting, we act ourselves into a new way of thinking, I'm going to clear that damn shelf off. I'm being funny about it, but it's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. Because one of the places that I get stuck the fastest and the hardest is with stuff. Mm-hmm. Here's this thing. Throwing it away really doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But it could be any, I don't even know what the thing, it could be anything. Mm-hmm. But there's nowhere to put it, where I put it. Mm-hmm. And there's no answer. Mm-hmm. And so it just gets put there. And it stays there for years. And it, in no time at all, I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to clean that shelf up and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See how long it takes me to do it. It's got to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to either put stuff somewhere else that makes some kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or do something else with it, take it down to the secondhand store, and let it be somebody else's problem.
So
we had
to. Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
As a way to see what will happen, just for the interest of seeing what will happen, you're going to clear that shelf off.
And what I really like is to. It's big and it's heavy. It's one solid piece of wood, nice wood, and I could take a chainsaw. But that seems wasteful. But I've got to find someone to take it out for me. Mm-hmm. Just once it gets clear, and maybe I'll set a goal to have it stay clear for 24 hours. It takes it out and actually do something.
It's easy to feel as though I completely recognize all of that. And watching myself go through and try to declutter, and stopping at, that t-shirt, I might really, it's got a few spots, but it would really be, and getting to a place of just chuck it, because otherwise I know that the way I got all of the stuff that's there is by putting it down because I didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't chuck it because it still had value. So there's a little guilt to deal with in the chucking process. Mm-hmm. But it also feels just unburdening, mm-hmm. in that same, mm-hmm. just, you know, clear it. And yeah, it may, stuff may ooze back in, but to not let the process of, I don't know what to do with this, get in the way of getting to the place I feel I have to get to be really clear. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, so not wanting that process of not knowing what to do with it get in the way of having that unburdened. Getting clear.
Yeah, and I can see that there's little stories to all of it. Mm-hmm. And the little stories are what maybe what stop the movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. My niece and nephew give me things. And I dearly love my niece and nephew. And some of the things they give me, I don't particularly. Uh-huh. I mean, it just doesn't, but I hold on to who it came from instead of, and then I'm stuck with the object. So those, and so am I going to feel guilty when I give away the Dorje that my nephew brought me from? Anyway, those are some of the stoppers of the stories that go along with
them. Those stories that are stoppers, that and seeing that there is an unburdening though in that chucking it, and also having that experience of there being some guilt that comes with that.
Yeah, and I think some of the chucking is also disidentifying from believing the I who feels she needs to hold on to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Disidentifying from the I who feels like she needs to hang on to it.
Yeah, I don't have to be that, mm-hmm. anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm. More minutes? Susan?
I just noticed one thing. I think it goes along with that. Anyway, when you like something versus disliking, so I actually like it when my house is clean. So I was looking at getting attached to getting, so there's a shelf and everything's clean. And I have a whole day, and then the whole family comes in. I just start dropping things, you know. And I have a difficulty in maintaining the pleasure or the joy, mm-hmm. because I've been attached to the fact that I've gotten everything cleared and clean. Uh-huh. And so what I've been looking at is moving into what is. So what happens is a part of me starts picking up after them or yelling out orders or, you know. And just looking at that liking, you know, that there's some part of me who could, I cleaned my house on Friday, everybody was up skiing, all four of them. And so nobody can mess it up. So, and I was just enjoying all, you know, and, yeah, just the bills are paid and the food is put away and the, everything was perfect. And then the call comes, we're 15 minutes away. And then they come in and they're all taking their ski stuff up and on the floor, bringing their food in and plopping it on the counter. And, you know, I just could see my whole attachment that it happened. You know, that I didn't know it happened. I just thought I was really, well, I think I was. I actually think I was until that 15-minute call, that I was just enjoying what was so. But there wasn't an ability to transition. Mm-hmm. You know, there's somebody who believes this is what makes me feel good, uh-huh. and that doesn't. Uh-huh. So just practicing with that is it too. Just that is it too. That's all. That is it too. that there's the experience that of joy that you have, and you can think that it's because everything is just so, and then. Then things get dropped down on the floor, and then you see that attachment that was there, that the joy is attached to the externals being a certain thing. Mm-hmm. And seeing that
is it to?
But wanting to practice with that. I don't quite have the
experience. Wanting to practice with that.
Yeah, just the finding, you know, staying on that joy track, that realizing that I wasn't actually, I was joyful because it was fun to clean and be by myself and everything, to be quiet, but that then ego comes in and says, well, you're really joyful because it looks so nice. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see that slip in. Mm-hmm. So that slips in, and now it doesn't look nice, so I don't get to be joyful, but it could be, oh, how a skiing hug, let's pick these up. Hang them up on my thing. But instead, that had slipped in, and that thing is what took it away. Not that everybody's throwing stuff, but it has me believe it's because everybody's throwing stuff on the floor as you just get on there.
It has me believe that it's because of those externals, and really it was because that story slipped in. Mm-hmm. It's the practicing with staying on the joy track, despite the externals.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.